It's the morning. It's What Do You Know with Joe. Let's get to the intro.
Sit down and chop it up. Let's talk about it.
Well, let's ask the right question.
Who's convinced?
We're starting to see the mind frame stuff now.
It's What Do You Know with Joe. Hello, friends. Thank you so much for joining me. I am very, very, very excited to be doing this podcast. Winnie just rolled up next to me, too. She's excited. I think Baxter's excited. Everyone's excited, really. Thank you so much for joining me. This is the very beginning of What Do You Know with Joe. I think we've got a great lineup of first-rounder interviews coming. Not going to give away who they are just yet, but we'll go ahead and jump right into our first one. It's with my buddy, a good person. His name is James Wells. Can't wait for you guys to hear this interview as well. Very excited to get started. A little background. James and I met working together in 2018. He has now since, gone and done great things within, his career and also has, his own personal podcast that he does with two of his buddies, great individuals as well. So very excited to get into all that. So we won't beat around the Reggie Bush anymore. We'll go ahead and kind of get into that interview. Want to leave you with the last piece before we go. Stick around afterwards. We're going to go ahead and kind of chop up and talk about a little bit of other topics, how the interview went. I definitely, want to talk about what you guys think and some highlights for sure. And then also definitely want to, bring up some topics that I'm thinking about, some things that, get the mind going, and be curious to see if you guys, have any insight as well. But we'll go ahead and jump right into it. Stick around afterwards. We got some things coming up. And then also really hope you guys enjoy this interview with James Wells. So we'll go ahead and get started. Here is James.
Welcome to What Do You Know with Joe. I'm sitting here with my buddy James Wells. Super, super psyched to have you on the show, my man. Very excited to be here. Thanks for being on with us.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited. Let's get into it.
Yeah, definitely. So hope you're doing well. Yep. I think the last time we spoke, unfortunately, I don't think it was my wedding. I think it was we played golf, but sorry for being a shitty friend there. But, how you been? How's things?
Good. It's good. A lot going on. Work's been kind of crazy. Work from home life, I think, is looking good on me. But I'm actually moving in a couple of weeks, making the big city move, going to D.C.
Wow.
So I'm moving, working a lot, and I'm pumped, man. I'm really excited to be in the city. So,
okay, so wait, really, where really are you right now? You are in
Falls Church.
Falls Church. Okay, so you're in Falls Church. You're moving to D.C., the big city, by the way.
Correct.
Washington, D.C.
Correct.
Interesting. I had already thought you lived in D.C. That's crazy.
No, I did not. I was looking to move last year, and then I got this little virus you never heard about called COVID.
Oh, no.
And so that put my move on the back set because COVID was not fun. But it actually, dude, it was a blessing in disguise. I'm actually moving into a brand new building. My building's being built right now.
Brand spanking new.
Oh, yeah. No one's lived in there. So, okay. It all kind of worked out, and I'm excited, man. I obviously moving.
Are you northwest?
So
southwest, northeast.
It is. Southeast? It's called Eckington. A lot of people don't know about. Have you ever heard of Noma?
No, I have not.
Union Market. So it's basically like a up and coming place in the city. They built a bunch of apartments, and now they need people to live there. And because of COVID, the DC had a bunch of people moving in. COVID hit. Everyone's moving out. So they're giving out, I mean, some deals you wouldn't even believe. 3 months rent. Free parking for a month, what have you. So
sounds like a deal. Listening in. If you're in the area,
if you're in the area, definitely check out DC. And like kind of in a sales regard, people need to understand when you're in these apartments, know like you have the power. Really? If they give you a deal that's not good enough, just say no and walk out and say the place across the street's give me 2 months. So
think about what you're on the other side of that. Think about
exactly
you're the procurement. You're the procurement officer. Yes. I can say what goes.
Yes. The power of saying no, man.
Right. We'll talk about that later. We're also going to talk a little bit about COVID. We'll talk a little bit about that. Not too much.
Beautiful.
I don't want to dive in too much, but wow, cool. Hearing crazy stuff.
But a lot going on.
So that sounds great. Glad to hear you're doing well. Better now that you're free. You're good. You're
I'm all good. All good. Okay. All good. Got two shots in my arm, backstage and everything.
Yes.
Yes, now, sir.
Are you a Pfizer guy or Moderna guy? You strike me.
Big Moderna guy. Big Moderna guy. Are you a Pfizer guy?
6-1.
You a Pfizer guy?
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. My gauge is probably off for sure. But
sure.
Wow. Okay. Nice. Cool. I am a Pfizer guy, but you really don't have a choice. I didn't get really. Did you get a choice? Did you get to choose?
I didn't. I sat down. The dude was like, "Here you go." I was like, "Which one is it?" He was like, Moderna." I was like, "All right, cool."
You go this way. You go this way. I was like,
"Right."
And Pfizer. I was like, "Yeah, that's me. I'm the one they call Pfizer."
Okay. I am Pfizer. I am Pfizer. So all good. All good here.
Nice. Okay. Well, we've kind of beat around the bush a little bit, but that's kind of what we do here on What Do You Know with Joe, not beat around the bush, but we want to talk about what you do. We want to learn everything about you, and we've kind of beat around it and, you know, not dove in. So let's dive in. So you are an inside sales rep. Tell me a little bit about that. Tell me, you know, what you do, kind of what it looks like.
Sure. So inside sales is kind of just like any job. I think it's been great because I'm at a big vendor, so I don't have to do the whole like, hey, this is James from Oracle, and nobody knows Oracle, right? Everybody knows Oracle. So I'm processing orders. I'm actually building a lot less quotes. When people said moving to the vendor would be easy, I didn't believe it, but it's so true. The vendor position's a lot easier. It's a lot less work than we were doing before. But my prior job really made this vendor job seem easy because my job before Oracle, I was doing everything from A to Z. And now that you're the vendor, I mean, a lot of it's just flipping paper. So recently I've just been selling cloud to higher education, which has been fantastic, a huge blessing and a curse because every school needs cloud, right? Because there's thousands of kids online, but no school has money for cloud. Right. So it's kind of like this in between of like, do we invest in cloud now, knowing that a bunch of our students are going to be online and kind of go into some debt, but it's been interesting. It really has, especially coming from the federal government. And, you know, it's a whole different game when you're going to schools, right? Because it's not like they have bajillions of dollars of funding like I did at my past job. So It's been good. I think cloud's the future. So I'm really glad I'm selling cloud.
Yeah. And you mentioned like who you were selling to, what you're doing. What would you say, especially, you know, you've seen a huge difference from in selling to one and selling to the other? You know, those are two totally different beasts, both beasts in their own right. Have you seen like any shift in your skills or your tactics on how you've approached the customer from your old job, Fed, DOD to, you know, higher education?
So I definitely have. I had a little different experience, a lot of higher ed, because I had the Northeast, right? Which means Ivy Leagues. So Harvard and those guys, they didn't really see a huge dip in admissions and all that. So they still had the money. But the biggest difference is the government talks about money like it's inevitable. Right. Like they when they talk about budgeting,
right,
when you give them $1 million quote, nobody bats an eye because they're like, we're going to get it. Versus when I'm talking to these schools, they have to balance how many students they're going to have coming in versus how much they can spend on technology.
That makes sense.
And I never heard the government say like, oh, we got to wait to see what we get this year because they know, you know, budget's going to be there. It's no problem. So The conversation has been different because I have to speak like particularly to, will you guys be able to afford this next year? Versus the government saying, let's buy it now for the next 5 years because we know we'll have the money. So it's a different conversation, but I needed to learn it because I'm not going to be selling to people with empty pockets, you know, deep pockets my entire career. So it was a good change for sure. Mm-hmm.
And did you notice anything in terms of, I guess, let's say a timeline to purchase? You know, Fed's got so much red tape and, you know, especially those who are in the industry. I know you're doing SLED right now or higher ed, excuse me. And, you know, it's definitely fiscal end of year right now for Fed. What did you say? You know, timeline's kind of the same or, you know, things like that. Are those the same across or is one quicker than the other? Have you seen some difference?
So the government's not as quick, obviously, because they have a lot of rules. What's tough about schools is when school is out or when school's about to go in, like the August, September timeline, bro, nobody can work on cloud projects. They have millions of kids. Like, I didn't even think about if like 14,000 kids have issues with their login, that takes a lot of manpower and work. So like these next 3 months for schools, they really can't get much done because they're onboarding. They're like teaching kids how to use their online stuff. And this more than ever is we have more kids online. So timeline is like, it's gone both ways. The government can move quicker because they have money. Schools can't because they're at the mercy of a school schedule. So that's basically the difference.
Okay. And when we're talking like kind of what you harped on there, when we're talking about, you know, selling to those higher eds, you got to think too, those IT staffs at those colleges, you know, sure, Harvard and those guys, you know, okay, they're working with the best of the best. Those smaller schools and those other guys, those IT staffs may not be, it might be like you said, it's one guy sitting in a room or one, you know, lady hanging out typing something. It may not be this robust team. So you definitely, you definitely have, you know, it when you're selling to them, have you seen, especially tailoring to a smaller, you know, IT staff or like, where's the Fed, you know, they've got a SOC team, a dedicated, you know, endpoint team, you know what I mean? There's so much, you know, stuff already mapped out. Is that, have you seen any difference there maybe?
So the big difference there is having two or three guys who have worked with Oracle for 20 years. A lot of these small schools will bring up a product and everybody in line will say, I haven't used that product before. That never happened when I was working with the government. Because if you have one guy and that guy worked on, let's say, VMware his whole career, and now you're throwing Oracle at him, I mean, he doesn't have another resource. He has to go learn. Right. So they don't have the money for consulting, but a lot of times they need it. They need someone to come in and actually be an expert. But like the Air Force, come on, they have 5 or 6 guys who've been dealing with every software on the planet. So that's
waiting. Just
yeah, right, exactly. Like literally waiting. So that's been the big difference as far as like bandwidth and how many people they actually have dedicated to things. Mm-hmm. But I think I really did need to learn that, because every organization is more like a small college than it is the Air Force, you know?
Okay. And so, you know, to jump back a little bit, we've definitely talked about that. Tell me about, you know, no one just jumps into being an inside sales rep. You know, there's a lot of definitely in between, and to be successful at an inside sales rep, there's a lot you have to do. How do you think you got those skills? And tell me a little about like some experiences maybe you had that like you know, I think especially if sales reps are listening, I think a few can definitely point out to maybe a call or two or like a campaign or something that they can say, this is kind of where I separated myself, or maybe this is where I had that like, okay, how I'm going to approach my deals as a salesman kind of thing. So did you ever have, you know, how did you get those kind of thoughts? And, you know, tell me a little about the skills you developed at that previous company you mentioned.
Sure. So mine actually goes a little bit before my first job, which is great. I was working at Target for the summer. My parents were pestering me about getting an internship. I mean, everyone knows what this conversation is. Parents. You're not making enough. You need experience. You need experience. And I kept telling them, I'm going to get one, but I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't interviewing. Right. Exactly. I was like, I'm going to do it. And I'm in line at Target, and I was a cashier, and I basically, that was my sales. I would talk to everybody who came by. Yeah. I even would do this bit where if I saw a mom or dad come by with like a Clemson shirt on, I'd be like, oh, I go to Clemson. And they're like, oh, really? What dorm do you live in? I'm like, oh, I'm in a frat. I live in one of the houses. So, we shoot the shit or whatever. Guy comes through my line and I talk to him for a good 10 minutes. And he goes, what do you do right now? I was like, I'm home from school, but I have to go back for one more semester. He's like, do you want to work in sales? I was like, I guess. He was like, I have a software company in Sterling. We're looking for interns. Mm-hmm. You in? I was like, well, I make $9 here. What are you guys paying? They're paying 17. And I was like, you can take my red shirt. Yeah. I was like, I would literally go inside and quit today. Like it was like at the Wolf of Wall Street, you know, I would literally quit my job today. So I went and quit my job and I started at this small software company. And honestly, man, I loved it. I loved calling people. I loved the whole process. So after that, that's when I went to my next job, which was the government and really being on the phone, but like talking to people and really having people open up, that's been something I've been good at my entire life. So I've always been told like, oh, sales are so natural to you. But like until you're actually at the computer talking to people and you somehow are talking to a contracting officer about what the Wizards should do next week. And you're like, you know what, dude, this is what I was bred to do, right? Like this is why. But to me and to you as well, and a lot of good salesmen, we don't know how good we are at it until you talk to somebody else who says talking on the phone is my nightmare. I'm like, what? It's not a problem to me. Like,
yes,
it's no problem. You know, like, you know,
it is no problem.
Exactly. So that's kind of what brought me into sales. Now I just continued that with Carisoft, and really slamming the phones wasn't something that really made me nervous. And that's when I really knew like, I can do this for a while. You know, I can definitely talk to people and get to the sales process, but learning that CRM is the bigger part of sales was tough. I thought it would be like, you know, like in all the movies, like, Bob, come on, man, buy this, hang up, whatever. But in reality, it's like, how do you open this box on this? Right. You know, like that's what really sales is. Like, it's all like, nobody wants to do a CRM. Exactly. So no one wants to do CRM work, and you have to be organized and good at that, because that's what gets you to better jobs. So
exactly.
It's crazy. My sales career really started like when I was just in line at Target, Super Target, that is, sorry.
No, that's, and I think it's very much, you know, I had a different entry into sales for sure. Kind of similar, you know, I came back and my parents were like, hey, I came back from first semester of college. And I was like, that was rough. That was, I didn't, you know, one, I didn't do well academically. And two, you know, that I'm a little, you know, I realized what it's like to be away on your own for the first time, but my parents were like, no, you're getting a job. And I was, that's when I started at, you know, the Carisoft office where we first met. And it definitely, you know, when I first started, I didn't get it, but I was very fortunate to start picking it up. And I think, like you said, there's a lot of those, you start realizing at some point, you're like, I could do this. And like, I don't mind doing this because this is cake to me. This is nothing. I mean,
right.
So, you know, the person at the end of the phone, even if they're upset, even if they're mad that I'm calling them, you know, they don't want to speak to me. The worst they can do is just hang up the phone, you know,
the absolute worst. And glory days will still be there when they hang up, you know.
I'm like gonna keep a quote note and says, hey,
I'm not gonna call them again. Like right.
And
right.
That's little, and it's funny. That's the whole process, right? Like that's funny, is like that's actually call campaigns and like updating notes and being like, hey, by the way, Bob from you know, Fort Bragg does not like being called between the hours of like 9 and 10.
So do not call him
afternoon or something like that. Or
exactly.
And it's just, you know, stuff like that.
And I was telling some of my friends, like, this is such a weird moment as an adult. And I never really understood, like, why do my mom and dad like work? And it was like my second year at Carisoft, and like this contracting officer called me with an issue, and my boss talked to me, and I sat on my computer and I said, I actually know what to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I know how to fix. And it felt so good to be like, you know what? I got to call these two guys. I got to get this. I got to get this document. I got to get this by Friday. And I was looking around and I was like, I keep thinking I don't know what I'm doing, but I do. Like, I really understand. And that was like a big, like, not a humbling moment, but a moment where I was like, I think I can actually do this. Like, it's a lot of things to do, but I really know what I'm doing. So that really felt good. That really felt good to have that happen.
See, that's what we want to hear. And that's, I think that's definitely something, if people are listening, like, what's it like to go into sales? Go into it knowing, hey, like, not every, like, the first couple of calls you have, the first everything you have, it's not gonna go the way you think it's gonna go.
No.
It's any call you have is gonna go, but the first one for sure. I mean, rarely I feel like you have a call that's like A1 out of the gate. You're like, oh, this works, I'm gonna be successful at this. It usually takes like the first, you know, after you go through, you know, the first like 10, you're like, okay, I've kind of gotten it into my groove. And that's, I think, the part people don't understand is, like you said, when you really step up to the plate or step up to that phone, you're all of a sudden, something comes over, you're like, oh, this is real. We're about to talk, and we have to talk business, and we got to talk about, I actually have a goal. I got to get this guy to do something.
Right. I have to get this answer.
There's an objective and I have to complete it. And this person, you know, needs to do it. So that's really great to hear. And, you know, do you think there's anything in particular, like one of those skills that, you know, got you at the role where you think you are today, or maybe has set you apart at your current, you know, role that you have? I definitely think, you know, as far as, cause I focus more on renewals. I think the process I learned there at Carisoft has, you know, helped me so much, you know, where I am now because of just how much I just did it every day. Do you think there's anything like in your process, you know, that you think helps you at where you're at now and is maybe developed within, you know, theirs in that role?
Absolutely. And this is what I've tried to tell people who come from sales jobs where they have you do too much. You don't make a lot of money. It's not ideal. I know that. But what was crazy was going to a vendor and talking to guys around me who have never been on a bid board, who have never sent a quote out, mm-hmm. who didn't know that we had to get 3 bids. And I'm looking around like, I did this.
Day one stuff.
Exactly. It's day one stuff. So like when I went to the next job and I realized I'm going to be doing less work and I know more than everybody around me, like Carisoft was actually a blessing, man. Mm-hmm. It really was. Cause really I know more, like some guys who start at vendors, they literally just like are in a nice territory at a huge vendor and never have that moment where they have to explain who they are.
Right.
And I did that for a year, 2 years.
Exactly.
Almost. So that's really what's helped me at this job is I did so much more before. I mean, dude, remember we were putting on marketing campaigns for a vendor and like not seeing a dime of it, you know, and like being on a commission base now, I mean, it's life-changing. It really is. So like as bad as those Carisoft days were, as some of them were, I mean, it was a blessing. It really was. I learned so much. And I try to tell people, you don't know how much work we do at that job until you go to your next one.
Absolutely. And I think definitely a lot of those like tangibles that you bring from that have, like you said, you know, you're like, oh man, that's, I thought was something, you know, if I brought up at my previous place would get almost laughed at because it's like, how do you not know that? Whereas here it's almost making me a differentiator and I look like I'm really knowledgeable about something. So
100%.
You know, it's something that like you take in yourself and you're like, okay, I can use this.
Right. And I would want to tell any salesperson that like, there's a lot of turnover in sales.
Yeah.
And it's kind of scary, but you can really change your entire career when somebody has the line of, hey, this guy's leaving in 2 weeks and you step up and just say, you know what? I got it.
Yep.
Like that's how I think take it, because like sales, like turnover is literally every other week. Somebody could be out, a boss could leave, an SE could leave, whatever. And like, just like at every other sales job, my boss was helping me cover the Air Force. He had to move to the Army because the Army guy left. They were looking for an Air Force account manager. I said, no, I got it. Mm-hmm. Now, it was the most stressful year of my life, but I learned more in that year than I probably will in my entire career, because it's the whole, you know, throw you in the water, learn, you know, see if you can swim.
Yep.
I think everyone in their career should not back down from those spots, because you will learn so quickly because you have to.
Exactly.
Because the answer is like, you cannot get off the phone without this answer. Mm-hmm. So like, what are you going to do when someone says, hey, we need this price to go down $1,000 and you need to have them accept it.
Right.
And you can't get off and look around and say, you know, whose job is it? It's yours, man.
It's your
job. You
got to do it. It's going to come back to you. Someone's going to come back to you.
Right. What happened? And it's your fault. Right. And it's your fault. So
just be prepared.
I think exactly. So when people around you are saying, oh, I'm leaving, I'm doing this, look for spots, man. Look for big accounts that people don't want to have anymore, because that's your opportunity. So it's good.
Be in the right place at the right time. And I think a lot of what we've talked about, a lot of what you said, you know, sure, take the sales part away for it, take, you know, even the customers away. I think that whole concept of, you know, no matter what job you do, at some point you're going to have to do the nitty gritty. You're going to have to do the, you're going to have to immerse yourself deep within, you're going to have to immerse yourself. I don't have that. I'm vaccinated. I actually just,
okay. Shout out, buzzer.
Shout out to COVID virus. I just had a tickle in my throat. No water nearby. James is smart. James, ladies and gentlemen, for those who aren't watching, has a cup next to him.
I do. And you gotta go get one.
You've done the same. Podcast Rookie 101 right here. You
know, gotta have it.
That too. Gotta have it. Water. My fault. But anyways, sorry. So what we were saying, I think people can really take those lessons and say, yeah, that's kind of what I'm experiencing. Mine. Like, I just finished doing the nitty gritty, and I, you know, I feel like I'm ready to take next role. And so and so is leaving. Go for it. Just go at. Go say, hey, I think I can take that role. Go to your. You never know. He might be like, oh, thank goodness, because that's now a weight off my shoulder. You never know how they may respond. You may could get you places that, you know, and again, it's kind of like what we said, you know, when we were talking on the phone, the worst they can say is we're going to go through a process, or no, we're not, we're going to do something else. But the best thing that can happen is them saying, oh, actually, absolutely. Let's go ahead and get you started and, you know, ramped up on what's going on. And then don't be afraid. Once you've taken on that role, accept it, know you can crush it, and just move forward with it. Cause you wanted that role. You asked for it,
right?
You would take it. And I think a lot of people, you know, no matter what you're doing, you can definitely say, hey, I don't necessarily like, or I'm at a place right now where I feel like I'm doing a lot of grunt work and I know a lot of tangibles that I can go somewhere else and be super successful.
Yep.
Don't be afraid to take that leap, or don't be afraid to, you know, do that, because you never know what's going to happen, and don't be afraid to ask. So I think a lot of what we're saying can definitely be applied to those as well.
Like you have to ask. And I was at a football camp, and they had like a player come by and talk to all the kids and everything. And he had this huge speech about like, you don't know until you ask, you don't know until you do. Dude pulled out $20 and said, does anybody want this? And all the kids were like, yeah, absolutely.
$20?
But nobody moved. Some kid stood up, walked up to him, grabbed the $20. He said, that's what I'm talking about.
And the kid who took $20 is like,
exactly. He's like, but you don't know until you ask. You don't know until you get up and go get it. And it was such a small example.
Exactly.
But I realized so quickly, like, sometimes that is it. Like, did you ask?
Did you ask?
Mm-hmm. Did you ask? Like, that's sometimes the answer. Like, that's why, like, now when I'm out, like, shopping for things, especially like TVs, price matching, or saying something like, hey, I really wanted to buy this TV, but I didn't want to spend over $500. All of a sudden they're like, you know what? One second. Let me talk to my boss.
Yeah.
And it's like, just ask. Just came to, exactly. But it's like, what if you just bought that at full price? You just didn't ask. What's the worst they can do? They can do is sell to you at full price. Exactly. Exactly. So the lesson there is like, you have to ask, what's the worst they can do? So
exactly.
It's a good lesson. It's a good lesson.
So jumping into something else here, my friend, and I think you're excited about this topic. You, my friend, were a college lacrosse player. I'm not even going
to give
you, because let's call it, you were a college lacrosse player. What college did you attend, sir?
I went to Wingate University. It's about 30 minutes outside Charlotte.
For those who don't know specifically, I don't know, like a guy, someone we know named Rory, he doesn't really know North Carolina. Like that. Charlotte is in North Carolina.
It is.
And it's on the other side. It's near, like, you know, the point of Virginia and over there. And it's also on the opposite side of Raleigh. And we won't even
shout out Raleigh.
Even dive into that. Tell me about, you know, what it was. I mean, what was it like? You know, when did you maybe realize in college or in high school, you're like, I'm going to go to college for this? When were you getting, you know, those looks, you know, when were you getting those, you know, because you were probably nasty with the stick, you know, balls at X, all those good lacrosse
games. Balls at X.
But you know, what, tell me about like when you like knew you were going to play college lacrosse, and then what was that kind of like?
So my recruiting summer, and I think I can say this for any athlete, was the most fun summer of my life. I don't know if it's going to be topped. Tournaments every weekend, college coaches everywhere. But my big moment was when I came off of a field and there was like a Division III coach who came over to me and he said, son, are you playing in college? And I was like, I mean, I don't know. I'm here. I'm playing, whatever, you know. And he talked to my dad for a while. And without that conversation, I just thought I was another kid, right? Yeah. But like, he really went up to my dad, asked my college plan and everything. So, excuse me, I got to play on a club team in Maryland. And this was the biggest blessing of my life, because we kind of combined with another really big private school club team. And I got to go to literally the biggest tournaments that there are in lacrosse college. So the Bryan Shootout is at UMass. I went to a couple tournaments in Baltimore, and like, these kids were so good, but like, I was playing well. Like, I really felt like these kids weren't that far above me. And that's when I really realized, I was like, I can do this at a high level, at the next level. And kind of getting all the letters from coaches and realizing how much recruiting is literally just sales. Now that I've kind of grown up and listened to like all the things the coaches tell me, I mean, they're selling you.
Right.
They're literally, I mean, I went on a couple of recruiting trips and all it is it's a sales pitch. It's the right. same thing. So my big thing is I wanted to go to the South. You know, I'm a wimp. I didn't want bad weather. So I told my dad, any letter that's above Virginia, you can throw that in a recycle bin. Because I'm not going up there. Like RIT reached out to us and dude, I mean, yeah, Rochester. I mean, they were talking about playing in like 2 feet of snow, and I was like, that's not me. You know, I'm literally not built like that. But I think, and I know we're gonna get into a little bit later, but I wish I could tell kids now about going to college that if you don't love this sport, you will find out in the first 2 months.
Okay.
It is, you're not just playing lacrosse, it's your job. It's not a sport anymore.
It's not a sport. It is a job.
You are at this school to play this sport, regardless if you are Tua, regardless if you are a small person at a D3 school. Your job at that school is to play sports. Okay. That's why you were there.
It's on the record. That's what it is. Your job.
That's it. That's it. Play sports. So I kept on hearing these kids from Stonebridge, my high school, say like, I played for a couple of years and I stopped. And I'm like, how'd you stop playing sports? Sports my whole life. And now I get it. Because I only played till I was a junior.
Okay.
But you have to realize you are giving up everything. And a lot of a small aspect that I don't think people realize is Snapchat changed college sports forever.
People were
like, what do you mean? And I'm like, imagine you're sitting in your dorm room, right? It's dry season. You cannot drink. You have to do homework. And you also have to go to bed at like 9 because you practice at 5 a.m. in the morning. You go to your boy who's at a frat at NC State and he's chugging a loco. He's at a tailgate. And you're like, why am I doing this?
Right. Right. Exactly. You know,
why am I doing this? Because everyone doesn't realize something. The fun part you guys see on TV is only 2 hours of work that they do.
Exactly.
They work all week for you to see that 170-yard play that they've ran a million times that week. And it was not fun when they ran it. Mm-hmm. So when people are like, oh, college athletes have this like fun life, you get to see the fun part. You know, you don't see the 5 a.m. stuff. You don't see a senior sitting over your shoulder saying like, why are you eating pizza? Like, I never realized how important my diet would be. Because I saw the seniors chopping up chicken and putting it in a salad. I was like, what are you guys doing? They're like, we have conditioning today. I threw up so much our first day of conditioning. Because it's not high school, man. You can't grab a Big Mac before the game like we all used to do and roll and do it. Because everyone out there is that good. Right. And I had my most embarrassing moment in college when I was trying to like step up in the film room and say, like, I know what I'm doing. So I raised my hand. And I was like, hey, coach, who's their fast Mitty? Right? Who's the guy who really like brings speed to the – and everyone was like – Every midfielder in college is fast. Like, what do you like?
The answer is all the above. It's all
they were the best player on their team.
Right.
So yes, everybody's fast. And everyone looked at me like I was crazy. And that's when I realized I'm at a different place.
I'm gonna sit down.
I was like, you know what? I shouldn't have said that. But my coach, who I had an adverse relationship with, actually had a really good moment where he takes all the freshmen in a room and he has everyone tell their best story from high school.
That's actually,
you know, everyone has like a, you know, I scored 3 goals and I had the game winning goal and all this.
Yeah.
Like, but at the end of all of it, he looks at all of us and goes, realize everybody was that person in the spring.
We all humble yourself. Story.
Everybody was that guy. Mm-hmm. You know, you never left the field. You scored 5 goals this game. You got to shoot 100 times. Everybody in this room was that guy. So remember that when we're practicing, you are not that guy, pal.
You are not that guy anymore.
Wow. So it's so humbling and it smacks you in the face. And Joe, to think about, I was a D2 athlete. And the amount of work that we had to do.
Yeah.
I truly can't imagine how D1 athletes do it. I really don't.
Right.
I mean,
think about an Alabama, not only an Alabama, like Tua, but then you think about the backup cornerback at Alabama too. Like even that guy's like lifestyle is even different in that aspect. So like, I'm curious, but like, you still, you know, like as far as like a big picture thing, right. You guys are, I mean, it's still, you're doing, you know, it's full-time practice, like, you know, practice. Your class schedule, I'd love to learn, like, you can tap in a little bit to that if you want to, but like,
I will,
you know, your class schedule is definitely a little bit different and augmented. Yep. And on top of that, like you said, I can't remember one time, unless it was myself trying to be somewhat responsible. I can't remember at one point, maybe rush at like 3 days during rush where they were like, you know, we can't really like, you can't really drink at the house. But even then people would like, you know, put it in like their like soda.
Yeah. Cup. Like they'd make
like,
it
it's not
right,
even
they,
that big, but like, it's one of those things. Right. Like, no one was telling me that. And like, that's totally different concept to me. And like you said, like, I can't imagine, especially you grinding every day and doing that and like going on Snapchat and being like, that looks really fun.
That looks that so
looks,
fun.
That looks like a good time. And they don't have to worry about, and they get to pick when they go to class like that. I mean, at the same time too, like, did you, when you made that switch, I feel like you might've been asked this question before. Did you ever have a moment of like, I kind of wish I didn't, or kind of wish I went back? Or did you ever say, you know, there were parts of it that like I really missed and like maybe I should try, or like, did you ever have one of those moments?
I did. And honestly, like, I think this goes to every college athlete. You think about it every day. You think about, what if I didn't do this?
Right.
Like, okay. what if I had all this free time, man? Like, mm-hmm. 'cause you give up all your free time. So let's go a little bit back to the class stuff. So let's say on a normal day, and this is the off season, right? Yeah. We'd get up at 6 a.m. and we'd have either weights or conditioning. And mm-hmm. then you all go to the cafeteria, you eat, and then you go to your 8 a.m., your 9, maybe like a 10. Then you have film in the middle of the day. So you have to drive down to the field house. You go down for like an hour or two of film, and you might work out too. Then you come back, have a couple more classes, and then you have practice at 3. And then you shower, you go to study hall, and then you go back to your dorm, and you have to get up the next day and do it again.
James.
Like,
James, that's so structured. That's so structured. Like,
it's so structured.
The most structured thing about my day was like picking my classes. And even then I picked those. And even then right. it was my own fault for not even, like, that's crazy. But literally said 3 p.m. and I was like, 3 p.m. Like, we're already at 3 p.m. You already had like 80 things. Like,
and we already have so much done. And like, you obviously, you can't go back and like chill with your boys and drink. Like, you have to go to bed because you have to do it again the next day.
That's gotta be,
and
there's days where like, I was like, hey, I would love to, you know what? That art class, and my parents, if they hear this, I'm sorry, it kind of explains, but like, hey, that art class at like 3 p.m. and it's Friday, and 75, the pool's open, sure,
right.
yeah,
I'm like, out.
And the Quick and Mark's got like, you know, 12 rack of Michelob's for like $8, sure.
I'll go do that. And I went to a small school, so you know how small schools work, right? So like my buddy and I, Logan, decided to bounce on an accounting class one time mm-hmm. to go and watch some lacrosse game. I was on in the afternoon. We go down and practice, and my coach would always put the class or the practice schedule in the locker. And mm-hmm. it says, Logan, James, come see me. And I'm like,
oh, what? No.
So I go up there and he's like, I got an email from your accounting professor. I was like, oh, he's like, you guys weren't in class today. I was like, no, we didn't go. And like, think about that. Like, no one's ever going to tattletale on you guys. Like, you guys are just skipping. Life goes on. And it's so structured. And like, you realize I'm not playing lacrosse anymore. This is my job.
Yep.
This is like, I clock in, I clock out. And the fourth string guy in Alabama has to do the exact same work that the stars that we know do. And they have to give up just as much as those guys do. Because a lot of people don't realize I couldn't visit schools. I couldn't go home for a lot of holidays.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, you give up literally everything. And we haven't even talked about attempting to have a girlfriend this time.
Oh.
You want to explain to a girlfriend that I won't see you from 6 a.m.? Till 5 p.m. And when I do, I'm going to be so tired that all I have to do is eat and go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. You have that conversation.
Right.
It's not fun.
No, it's not easy. It's not easy. And like,
right.
But what you were saying there, did you like, I kind of, we can kind of tap, you know, let's tap into it. Pardon the pun. Let's go into that segment.
Sure.
Did you find that it was easier to, you know, collaborate with female athletes? Did you, you know, it was so much easier because you could relate to them, right? You know, I remember every school is different. What did you call regular people? I know that's what our tags are.
We called them NARPs.
NARPs. That's what I remember. Okay.
Yeah.
I was a NARP one time. I had a friend on the soccer team. She invited me to a party, all athletes there. I went, you know, because I got invited. I brought my buddy with me.
Sure.
And we went. We were the only NARPs there. And let me tell you, we stuck out like sore thumbs. The minute they find out you are not an athlete,
gone. Changes everything, gone. Right?
Because like they asked, oh, what sports do you play? And I am a dumbass and go, you know, I play like intramural baseball and softball, and play like intramural football. And they're like, oh, so you don't play like real sports?
You play
like,
real sports, right?
I was like, well, what sports do you play? And she was like, well, I run track and field, and then I'm on the like, I think I'm on like the like soccer team. It's like, oh, so you play? Not only do you play multiple,
you mean
like, real? Like, there's real referee? Like, you have records and like there's statistics.
Practice.
So you find out very quickly too. Then that I feel like spreads like the plague. They're like, look at that NARP. And also, I'm schmuck, but at the same time, I don't look like a D1 athlete either.
Sure.
So, like, I walk into the party and they're like, that kid's either the manager or and most of them,
right.
Like, you know what? I'll be a NARP. And so very quickly, I went up to my boy and it's just very much like, yeah, we do not fit the mold, so to speak. Not that they were in hospital at all. It was a super fun party. We had a great time.
But it's just different.
Great time. It's just when you have those, you know, when you go to a party, as parties go, and you go to talk to someone, it's just the conversations got cut a little bit short. And I had to really, like you said, pull some of those hats or things out of a hat and say, so let's talk about this because
you don't want to talk about sports. Right,
because I you have a totally different life than me. It's different. So did you ever like have a relationship with an athlete?
I did. And the thing people have to realize is like, you don't really have a choice.
Okay.
Because to date a NARP, we'll say, as a lot of my friends did, like,
God,
like they really, like, you don't understand. It's like, I don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Like, you can be mad at me all you want that I can't hang out. that I can't go to this, but like, I don't have a choice. Or like, you know, if she wants you to come home for a holiday, you can't go.
Can't.
It doesn't matter if her parents want you. Like, you live, so it's a lot easier to just have an athlete be like, hey, you have practice at 4 today. Okay. So I won't see you till like 7. It's like, right. It's just exactly. Everyone gets it. But like, back to what you were saying about like the whole NARP thing, walking into a party. I just watched Inception. And sometimes I feel like when NARPs walked into parties, it was like their subconscious, right? Everyone's right. Everyone's like, yo, who's this? Who's this? Who's this? Who's this?
You know, and like,
everyone starts looking around like, whoa, are you on a, that's a NARP, right. That's a NARP, that's definitely a NARP. So anyone who doesn't know, a NARP is a non-athletic regular person. And
Joe.
Yeah, right. And it's, you know, it's just different in a sense of like, oh, so you have freedom. I mean, a lot of it's just like jealousy. Mm-hmm. So instead of it acting like we weren't jealous that they had those lifestyles, we'd be like, oh, that's a NARP, whatever. But like my college was literally all athletes, man. And we were like 40% athletes, something like that. I mean, literally everyone we talked to was an athlete, a recruit, and what have you. So I think it just made sense for you to do, you know, for you to do the NARP thing. To give you a reference, there's 10 freshmen who came in with me. 9 of us had girlfriends by the end of freshman year. None of us had girlfriends. Because you can't do it. Like, and all seniors said it. So all seniors said it's called winter break for a reason, because that's when all the freshmen lose their girlfriends.
Oh man, it's a reality check.
Right. But obviously all the freshmen are like, no, I love her. She's the one. And so obviously we got to winter break. People came home and I was like, yo, Logan, you good? It's like, yo, we broke up over winter break. I was like, yeah, so do we. So all the seniors are like, we're not making this shit up. Well, you're going to home. You guys are going to realize it's not going to work. And you're at a different school. So it's just crazy that like, you think you know so much when you're going in, you're like, I can do it.
Right.
It has to be athlete to athlete. It has to be. So
tell me how you think, and you let me know this too, because you're probably going to be the most knowledgeable. And I'm going to say this, you know, I'm sure Matt and Sam are probably like, you're probably the most knowledgeable individual, I guess, from like, if you were to look at the resume. Tell me how you brought your lacrosse skills and your love for lacrosse into your podcast. Time. Tell me about Quick Sticks and tell me about, you know, how you brought some of those skills in there and maybe some of the stuff you're doing, you know, how are your skills being honed into that and how are you guys doing with, you know, Quick Sticks?
Sure. So PLO Quick Sticks is what Joe's talking about. It's our podcast. And let me tell you, man, having a podcast is one of the most
fun
things I have done. It is literally like, and you know, every guy thinks that they want to sit on TV somewhere and talk sports. And I get that. But I think the delta between me, you, and some of the guys we used to talk to is I like to have fun sports arguments. I don't like when people throw out outlandish things just to get tweets and likes and what have you. And I like when people can back up what they're talking about.
Right.
So my buddy Zach invited me on his podcast and he was doing, it was about the draft. Okay. Right. And so he sent me an email and he was like, hey, you're going to talk about Justin Fields. Is he going to be successful? That kind of thing. Bro, I spent 6 hours watching Justin Fields tape. I was like, dude, this is the best thing. This is the best thing I have ever done. And I hopped on the podcast. I knew my stuff.
Right.
And a lot of people actually responded to my Instagram and said, bro, why don't you have your own podcast? Like, I'd listen to it, that kind of thing. And then I'm starting to think, like, back at Carousel, like, my desk was like the hub of the sports talk.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I was like, dude, I think I should do this.
Right.
Like, why not? You know, like, all you have to do is ask. And so I reached out to Matt and Sam, and it's kind of great because the PLL is new and we're kind of in a niche market where we're trying to teach people lacrosse, but also show them that this professional lacrosse league is real and it's a lot of fun. So it kind of just started because we would talk about PLL all the time. And we really say, like, is there a podcast out there for PLL? And there's only like one or two. So we wanted to have a really structured one and really have one that of like guys who like really watch the games a lot. Cause bro, when I'm bored, like at work, I have a PLL game on in the background.
Right.
I've seen the games 4 or 5 times easy. Like I'll be through a game and I'll be like, is this the one where he bangs it backside? And top left. Like that's how many times I've watched it. So I brought the lacrosse skill in of being able to talk about the entirety of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants you to just go over highlights. People want to learn
what this means. ESPN.
Exactly. Like, why are they chasing the ball behind the net? What's a face-off? So that's why we have the 101 session during our podcast where we teach something about lacrosse, because we want people to be able to keep up. And the PLL has done a really good job with that because when you're down a player, like after a penalty, it's called man up in lacrosse. It's called man up lacrosse. PLL knew that wouldn't stick. And so they just called it a power play. Because everyone knows what a power play is.
Everyone knows what a power play is.
Exactly. So it's just a notion that we don't have to teach anymore. Because it's like, what's man up? And it's like, okay, forget it. Let's just call it power play. Everyone knows what a power play is. You've played hockey. You've watched hockey.
You know,
and people know that. Exactly. So it's been the most fun project I've taken on. I mean, honestly, it's just so fun to like, we send agendas out on Mondays. Everyone has their talking points. And everyone has like a hot take.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta have a hot take. It's been the most fun project. And I hope it blows up. And our goal now is just kind of to get people on who are closer and closer to the PLL. So that's really our goal.
And
it's going well.
Do you ever, you know, I saw one episode and you had with the man you interviewed, was that a college, was that a, you know, I apologize, I did not listen to the to that interview, but was that a college friend, or I mean, was that like a coach you knew? Like, I think it's very cool. Like, you're bringing, you know, people close to the game to talk about it more. Like you said, you're just developing the game more. You're getting different different takes you're developing. Do you think you'll, you know, get more people to talk in about it, or is that what you want to do with the one-on-one? You know, I don't want to obviously open up Quick Sticks and obviously expose.
No spoilers. No spoilers. Right,
right. No, like it sounds. No, you guys have a process, and it sounds fantastic.
So Bryce is actually my buddy from college. He was probably the best face-off guy I played with. But the reason why Bryce was so important to get on is because, bro, he got a head coaching job at his high school that he went to. Listening to him talk about the stresses of, you know, you and I know he's one of the big high schools in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a lot of pressure on you. Parents, so as far as teaching, exactly, parents and all that. So when we're teaching lacrosse, I wanted someone who literally has to break it down to like literally a kid level to be on our show and talk about it. And Bryce loves the PLL as much as we do.
That's good.
And we're actually going to have him on the championships on Sunday. I hope people watch it. It's at 12 o'clock. Chaos versus Whip Snakes. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really good. And it's actually in DC.
That's pretty cool.
I'm so mad I have to miss it, but it's okay. So yeah, he's nice. A buddy. He's a friend from college, and we're going to have him on again. But our next goal was actually something that I did myself, which was great. I reached out to my high school coach. Mm-hmm. I sent him an email and I said, hey, can you just blast out our link to all your former players and everything else? Because Bryce's episode got the most listens because all of Bryce's players saw Bryce. So I was like, you know what? They're going to listen because Bryce is on. And if my coach shares something to his current players, they're going to watch it and they're going to watch it. Huge. And we might actually have a great opportunity because he's actually friends with a guy who coaches for one of the PLL teams. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I can connect you guys, that kind of thing. And this all comes back to what we talked about in the beginning is you just have to ask.
Right.
Like, everyone was like, yo, who are you going to reach out to? I was like, dude, my high school coach. I don't know. Everybody, you know? Right. Exactly. Start somewhere. So that's kind of where we're going with it. I want the episodes to get longer, but I want to be able to kind of combine highlights in it because that's what people care about. Like, they want to see the cool highlights and stuff.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're headed.
Awesome. It sounds great. And my homework for all this is one, to stop saying first off balls at X, because that's literally the only thing I
come across. And it's okay. We're used to it.
And then two, I'm a baseball player and you know, like for some reason there's all my friends play lacrosse, but like, I mean, for some reason, there's always that baseball and lacrosse back and forth. But, you know, I think, and I need to listen to the pod. I'm going to definitely listen because I definitely would love to hear Sam's hot takes. They're probably outlandish.
They are outlandish.
But I want to listen because I want to hear how it's going. I want to hear how you guys are doing it because I think folks just heard you have such a great process for it. Like, you already have, like you said, you guys send out an agenda every Monday. And by the time you guys, it's that process like that you brought from college, like you said, right? Like, you guys hear the hour we talk about on the phone, right? You got over the, you know, over whatever we're using, but we did a whole week's worth of stuff to prep for this. So this way it's a very smooth conversation.
Exactly. So it flows. And that's what we knew was important because we've all listened to sports podcasts or listened to some where like, there's nothing more awkward than saying like, hey man, what do you think about your offensive line next year? And the guy's like on his computer and he's like, it's like, we don't have time for ums, man. We send an agenda out, have your stuff ready. And it's great where I can shoot something back at Matt and say, you know, do you know what their faceoff was for that game? Matt's like, yeah, they're 42% because he looked up the faceoff stats offline. And so it just flows. And I knew that was so important because when Zach had me on his show, he literally gave me the cadence. Cadence is so important on these shows because you have to understand a lot of people aren't going to be watching. They're just going to be listening.
No, they're going to be listening.
So you got to go bang, bang, next thing. So if someone says, hey, we want your Justin Fields tape, we want it in 30 seconds, and then we'll banter about it. You can't just go on and talk forever. And you can't have a bunch of moments where you're thinking about Justin Fields. You have to know what you saw and have it ready. So that's what was so important. And I think anybody who's going to start a podcast, send out an agenda before and you know, get rid of those lulls, those like awkward lulls on the phone. So that's what we did.
Well, James, I think we've got a lot here. I want to thank you very much for being here. I want two really quick questions before we
leave,
just to wrap up. Thank you very much for your time. By the way, guys, listen to Quick Sticks PLL.
PLL Quick Sticks.
Who would you like to interview in an ideal situation? I know, and sorry for the quick wrap up. Who would you like to interview in an ideal situation? And two, who would you like to see me interview next?
Okay. So who would I like to interview? Is it realistic or unrealistic?
Anything you want.
Anything. So the answer would be Paul Rabil. Rabil created the PLL. Yes. He was one of my favorite players growing up. He actually just retired last week. It was last year. So hearing what he did for the PLL, creating a city-based PLL so people wouldn't feel like, you know, city, like teams aren't even binded to cities, man. Mm-hmm. So anybody can be a fan of anybody. I think that's just like a genius business play.
Right.
So I would like to, you know, listen to him and kind of see what he has to say. And for you to listen to, I would say it's crazy. I mean, his name's Django. I don't know if you remember him being in The Office. Do you remember Django? Yeah. So if you could interview him, man, I think it would help you a lot. He's helped me do all of this. Okay. I mean, he's helped me get on the podcast. He played Valley basketball. He's started a couple companies. I mean, he just, he has a really optimistic look, and he was in sales. He worked for August Shell. He's
awesome. I remember him. Yeah.
You remember him? So he's just really been this whole, like, why not attitude. And he's really the reason why I put this on. So I would say if you could talk to Django, I think that would really help you. And I think it's great because Nova is the smallest, biggest place I've ever heard.
Exactly.
You know, everybody knows everyone. Exactly. Everyone gets I would definitely say Django. And if it was a little unrealistic, I would say, you know, someone who started like a tech company, someone who's young like us.
Okay.
You know, something like that. Like the next.
I'm coming for him.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know who it is, but I'm coming for him, but I'm going to hit up Django. But James, thank you so much, dude. I can't thank you enough for helping me do my, you know, do this with me. Guys, go listen to Quick Six. James, thank you so much again, dude. Absolutely. I've had a lot of fun. I hope you had a lot of fun. Hope you keep just going. This is What Do You Know With Joe. That's what we're just talking about stuff, thinking about.
What Do You Know With Joe? I love it, man.
All right. Appreciate it, dude. I thank you enough. We'll talk soon again. And I'm going to go listen to Quick Six.
Sounds good, brother.
All right, man.
Peace.
Peace.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I want to thank James Wells again and a lot for joining me and being my first interview. It was super cool and super fun, like we mentioned. I think we both had a good time. And as you heard, we talked about some great things. A couple of things that I really liked from our conversation were, you know, I think anyone can take away the fact, no matter what industry you're in, you're going to have grunt work or do some work that no one wants to do. And unfortunately, sometimes that falls on your plate. And while it's a drag and not fun and, you know, not what you thought you'd be doing, it's a great place to harness and sharpen your skills and, you know, become better. I think a lot of the times during those harder mundane activities, you create processes for, you know, yourself to work more efficiently. And, you know, you can take those skills and bring them into a new role if you're moving in your career path, or to a new profession if you're jumping career paths. So don't be afraid to utilize those skills just because you're moving on in your career. You know, remember what got you there and still use those skills and just adapt them to your new role. I think another thing that I definitely learned so much on, and James, I appreciate you, you know, tapping into this. We said tapping in a lot. That might be the word of the podcast. Tapping in. College athletes, I think I underestimated, had no idea how much of their freedom was taken away in terms of the structure of their day. How many people outside of themselves have, you know, say into that structure in that day, to where, you know, yeah, I had some friends who were athletes and I kind of knew about the process, but never to that extent. You know, that one day where he was like, here's my 8 to 3, that sounded like my whole week at some point. And it was just, you know, I don't think I could put a price on that freedom that I had in school. You know, you're able to do a lot of anything, really. You know, you can do whatever you want to do, you just have to be smart. And I think athletes, that's why they're so successful during their careers, both professionally if they continue down that path, or, you know, whatever they're doing, they have that work ethic, and that work ethic has been instilled in them since they were 18-19 years old, and they've figured out that process. So by the time they're 22-23, it's not completely fine-tuned, obviously. You know, you can always, you know, fix it and upgrade it, but it's already established and the process is already there, and they're, you know, years ahead of people that are their age and that they'll be working with. So I think, you know, that was really something that stood out for me, and I think can definitely be beneficial in that, you know, make sure you have a process and something that works for you. And if you have a process and you stick to it, and you keep, you know, updating that process and making it better, I think you have the plans to be successful. And I think the other thing we mentioned, you know, I think it's, you know, speaking specifically on sales, and I think it is applicable to a lot of other industries, is when you're at that, James mentioned this, when you're at that top vendor, when you're at the, you know, top five of accounting firms or the best law firm, or you work for the best hospital, you know, you don't have to worry about some of those smaller things, because, you know, the industry has already kind of done that for you, in that, you know, your name, where you work, speaks for the kind of work that you do, right? So I think having that, being at a good vendor, can definitely separate yourself. So if you want to, you know, work for one of those vendors, definitely, or, you know, not necessarily a vendor, one of those top companies in your industry, or be the top company in your industry, you know, it's definitely one of those things. I guess I don't have the insight to be a top industry, but, you know, wanting to work at those companies, it definitely helps some of the conversation initially. You are going to compete against those other top name companies, but it eliminates, you know, that early door conversation of here's what I am and what my product does. or what our solutions or what our company does for you. I think another thing we mentioned, you know, and this is specifically to QuickSix or PLL QuickSix, is, you know, by asking questions, by, you know, doing those things, asking your network, you're able to potentially find a coach who's at the professional level based off, and what your whole podcast is based off, to be on your show, which is anyone's dream. So that would be, you know, I honestly, the only thing I can equate that to is if like Ellen DeGeneres, you know, got interviewed by me. That's something I think that was really, really cool. And don't be afraid to utilize your network. The last thing I think, and there were a lot of good positive messages from today or from that interview, and the biggest one I think was, you know, just don't be afraid to try something new. Doing this podcast is super fun. James has a super fun time doing his podcast. Find that thing that you like doing and give it a shot and do some research into it. The last couple of things I want to do and some topics I want to talk about and leave you everyone with. Number one, I want everyone's opinion on what's the best food to eat cold. You know, I think personally it's pizza, but something tells me, you know, I think some honorable mentions or some ones that could take the crown are fried chicken, Chinese food. I think Chipotle cold could be pretty good. Maybe a burrito. I don't know. Definitely want to get some insight there. That'd be a lot of fun. Second, this kind of came from James, and you know, he helped me kind of mold this part, and I really like it. And I want to get some people from, you know, you guys on who I think I should interview and, you know, what, why that would be the case. But I did a list of three realistic and, you know, three unrealistic, either because they're deceased or I just don't necessarily, they're fake. They're, you know, not real. So, starting with the real ones, number one person I would want to, you know, interview is Patrick Gelsinger. He is the CEO of Intel. I first heard about Pat Gelsinger when he was the CEO of VMware back when I was supporting them at my old job. And I think, you know, if there's anyone who can take a company who's been at the forefront or, you know, at the been in the industry since the beginning of time, it's Pat Gelsinger who can turn it around and make it and reinvent it and make it something new. So I'm curious to see that. And I would just love to hear his thought process and some of the insights on what he's trying to do to make it, you know, reinvented. James Park is the CEO of Fitbit. I think that would be an individual who I'd love to interview, get an idea of, you know, what medical technology is and how you develop it. And I, you know, why the certain medical technology is the best, you know, like, okay, yeah, that green flashing light, we see that heart rate sensor is the best, but did you like interview a panel of like five, doctors or like physical therapists? Like, how did you figure that out? And I'd love to learn more about that. Third on my list, is Sean Combs. Most of you know him as P. Diddy. I think that would be, he's the CEO of Combs Enterprises. I think that'd be a great interview. He's been in the industry of entertainment, since the early 90s for 30 years. And on top of that, other businesses that I think would be a great, you know, knowledge. I don't want people to think this is the whole, like, you know, would you rather take 500K or, you know, interview with Jay-Z kind of thing. Personally, my take on that, I would take the money and then go to Jay-Z and say, hey, here's 100K. Can I have 30 minutes of your time? And then ask him how to reinvest the 400K. That would be my answer. Cause I feel like, you know, that knowledge that Jay-Z's had, that ain't free. He's not going to give you that for free. You know, not by DMing him a million times and be like, wow, this guy really got through to me. Or this person really got through. No, I feel like you got to pay for that kind of information. So that would be my route. And that's not what I'm doing here. And then the last person realistic that I would like to interview is Lucy Liu. Lucy Liu is the actress from Charlie's Angels, Elementary from CBS, where she plays Dr. Watson. And then Scorpion King, classic, with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I believe she's in that. I could be wrong. I will double check that. And if I'm wrong, guys, call me out. But I believe she was in that. And I think it would just be, she's been around the industry for so long and, you know, been on TV and in movies. So I think that would be a good interview for sure. And then unrealistic, Honus Wagner. For those who don't know Honus Wagner, the best way I can put it, he's like the first baseball player ever, up there with like Shoeless Joe Jackson, kind of, you know, before Lou Gehrig and Joe DiMaggio. I'd love to sit him down with, you know, current baseball players like Tim Anderson and Aaron Judge and be like, here's who the current day is. And then also, like, I don't know, like the 90s, early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, and like all those players who are on like Andro and creatine, and say, hey, here's Rafael Palmeiro and like Craig Biggio. Let me know. Not that Craig Biggio did steroids. I'm pretty sure he only did like creatine or Andro, but I don't think he was on steroids. But love to just get that going. Sorry to say on baseball, but George Steinbrenner would be next. George Steinbrenner is no longer with us. He died in 2010, but he bought the Yankees in 1973, which you got to argue is probably the best investment of his life. If not, I'd love to learn that. And then I was watching a documentary about honestly not even about George Steinbrenner, but they brought up George Steinbrenner and they talked about how he had this board in his office and it was like always the roster of the Yankees and had everyone's position. And I would love to know, one, who's his like best board he thinks he ever built? Like what team did he put on that board? And hands down, it was the best team. I mean, there's a couple that he could probably put up there, I'm sure. Two, who's his all-time board? Like who could he, like who would he put on there? It's like all-time best players at each position. I'd be very curious to get that knowledge. And then the last one would be Sherlock Holmes. I know this one's kind of interesting because there's many people who have played Sherlock Holmes, but it would be sort of, I guess, an amalgam of all those people, and I'd interview them and be like, hey, what's it like being Sherlock Holmes? And I would just be, I think, an interesting interview to hear about the mysteries and, you know, old London. I think it would be fun. So that's who I think realistically, non-realistically, I'd like to interview. Please leave me some comments on who you think I should. Next week, I've got a fun interview with my buddy Colin. Very excited about that. Definitely jump in on there. I'm sure most of you know Colin. He's got a great, not only, you know, career path, but also, you know, he does a lot of cool stuff outside of his job. So I'm very excited to have him join in next time with Colin. And I thank you so much for just joining. I'm very happy. Thank you for listening. Again, we're just having conversations and I want to learn about everyone and, you know, things that make them great. You know, James being a college athlete, you know, he's doing his own podcast. He's a great inside sales rep. There's just so much more we probably could have even talked about. You know, like James mentioned, he's a sports fanatic. I like sports a lot. We could go on for that or go on, you know, with that forever. So join in next week. It'll be a great conversation again with Colin. I look forward to next week's topics and everything we can discuss. Thank you for joining What Do You Know with Joe, and we'll talk to you next time. I was going to say a week, but next time is the one. All righty. Bye-bye.